Even the people who seem to live charmed lives need to be able to handle change, because the world changes around us and the people and places in our own lives change as well. Some people just seem better at handling change. They roll with the changes. They welcome the changes. They even act as agents of change. These are the people our next guest sought out for her book on change. Sharon Weil is the author of Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. Sharon Weil is an author, activist, filmmaker, and somatic educator. She hosts a podcast called Passing for Normal and wrote a previous book called Donnie and Ursula Save the World. Sharon Weil, a pleasure to have you on The Exchange.
Thank you very much. It's great to be here.
That line in your bio that puzzles me is somatic educator. What's that?
So somatic education has to do with the body. So it has to do with using the body and movement in order to affect change, not only in the body, but in the way we think, in the way that we feel and approach the world. The specific kind of somatic practice that I teach is called continuum, which is based on the idea that we are primarily fluids, 75%, depending upon who you speak with, of our body is comprised of water, of fluids, and it is the fluids in the body and the cell that are the agents of change within our tissue. And by using the fluids of the body, we can move in a more fluid way, which means that we have more adaptability, which is what I'm speaking about in the books. Changeability is how do we meet change with more adaptability and flexibility.
So you're exposed to the concept of change and fluidness, it sounds like, a lot. I mean, do you see change accelerating over time? I mean, is this a fairly rapid pace of change in human history at the moment?
Well, you know, it's interesting because change is happening all of the time, right? I mean, it is the nature of nature that we change. You know, we just heard the weather report and we're speaking about, you know, it's sunny this morning, then it's cloudy, then it's raining. You know, nature is changing all the time, and we are part of nature, so it is always changing. However, it seems as if change is speeding up because of technology, because of, increased communication and just the way in which we are handling business, handling communications, right? We're getting rid of paper. Everything's being done electronically, and it does feel as if change is moving much more quickly.
Did you have changeability yourself, did you feel like, when you started this process? Were you pretty good at handling change or directing it?
No, not necessarily. You know, they say, we teach what we need to learn, or we write what we need to know. And, I've not always been one who's embraced change so well. In fact, there are many times when I've been dragged by change. But I also went through a period of time before I wrote this book where I had a number of significant changes, the death of my sister, a surprising divorce, change of career. And it seems often that when we have one significant change, there are many others that follow. I was in a period of time where I was meeting a lot of significant change and wondering, how do you do it? How do people do it? How do we meet these times? And especially, you know, these times of dire environmental change, you know, that we are experiencing lots of difference. And look, you're surrounded by fires right now. You know,
sure.
I was up in Yosemite, there were fires. I was up on Vashon recently, and there were fires coming from Canada. You know, how are we meeting these times? How do we meet change with change? You know, because of my somatic background, I look at change as the movement of change, because I look at everything as movement. So when you look at change as movement, then you have to ask yourself, okay, what helps me align with the movement of this change, and what is impeding that movement?
To literally go with the flow, it sounds like, and not get run over by it.
That's right. So how do I figure out what the nature of this change is so that I can go with the flow? Or, because if I'm not going with the flow, then I am in resistance to it, or I'm experiencing resistance to it. And so it's really one or the other. I'm either in flow or I'm in resistance, because the movement of change is happening.
So for, that's for yourself. And then when you decided to reach out and begin interviewing people, did the podcast essentially lead to the book? Is that the process?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I just wanted to start to talk to people that I found were doing very interesting things with change, approaching change in interesting, innovative ways across many fields. You know, I was speaking to people who were, in prison reform, in leading GMO movement, anti-GMO movements, people who were working in philanthropy, people who were working, again, because I come from a somatic background, people who were working with breath education, and people who were working with movement education and spiritual teachers. Spoke with two people who have something called Magicians Without Borders. Tom Werner is a psychotherapist turned magician, and they go to refugee camps all over the world, huge refugee camps, and do magic. And by doing magic, are inspiring hope in people who seem to have no reason to have hope.
I noticed that, and it's interesting because it's a juxtaposition with Tom Werner and Amber Gray, who helps people through trauma. But they're both dealing with people who need to heal their souls in a sense, but through very different techniques.
Really different techniques. And, you know, a lot of times people's challenge with dealing with change is not about the change itself. Now, in the case of both Amber and Tom and his wife, Janet Fredericks, they are dealing with the effects of the change itself. But sometimes people's difficulty with change is just about the speed of change. It's too fast or it's too slow, or perhaps it's the unseen nature of change. I didn't see it coming. And so they're dealing with shock. So when Amber goes into, she worked...
Let me pause you there because yes. I want to get into Amber's work a little bit here, but we're running out of time. Changeability is the book. Sharon Weil, the author, back on the Jefferson Exchange in a minute five. From Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, this is the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking to Sharon Weil, who is an author, activist, filmmaker, and somatic educator, about her book Changeability. She sought out people who are good at handling change and interviewed them for podcasts that led to a book. The subtitle is How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. You can join the conversation on the Exchange about how well you handle it or where you think you might need some help. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So we were talking about, and this is in a section of the book about people who help other people adapt to change. Tom Werner, you mentioned, is a psychologist who now with his wife goes out to refugee camps and performs magic shows to help people cope. Amber Gray is dealing with people in fairly dire circumstances who've had some trauma in their lives. So let's talk about what she does.
So Amber is a somatic psychotherapist, and so she uses body-based practices to help people move through trauma and literally locate themselves in their body. You know, a lot of times what happens when people experience trauma, whether it comes from, different forms of abuse, are literally not in their body, what we say, not embodied. And it's very important in order to heal to come back into the body, but it's a very painful experience. You don't want to return into the body that has been traumatized and has pain or is filled with fear. And so Amber has many different ways of working with people to help move the fear and return to a sense of wholeness. In the book, I talk about healing because I spoke with a number of people who are healers in one way or another. Talk about healing as necessary in order for lasting change to occur.
I noticed just anecdotally, it seems like there are more methods of therapy, like what Amber does, where people are getting their bodies engaged in the process and not just using their minds and talking, for example. EMDR, you know, the eye movement therapy and tapping and all sorts of things like that.
Yes. Well, again, you know, in my view, that is the way in which we really know what we know. You know, when you are sensation based, when I can feel my own experience, that is how I know the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when we're talking, it can become very abstract. But when I return to the breath, and one of my guests, Robert Littman, is a breath educator. He's brilliant and talks about, you know, a lot of people deal with anxiety, right? And he talks about one aspect of anxiety as not being necessarily an emotional issue, but actually being the result of a fixed breathing pattern, that we're not breathing. And when we're not, because a lot of times when people get anxious, right, their breath gets very shallow. And when you're breathing shallow, your body isn't getting enough air. And so your body goes into a panic. It's saying, I need more air. And then we attach an emotion to it rather than it necessarily going the other way around.
So, Sharon, you come out with seven principles for change in the book. Bring awareness, listen deeply, find community, proceed incrementally, align with nature, have hope, and spark fire. Were these more or less formed in your mind before you approached the people for the podcasts and the book, or did they come out of the conversations?
They absolutely came out of the conversations. And, in fact, the principle of listen deeply was the first one that started to emerge in common. When I was speaking to the people, the guests, a lot of them approach their work by listening deeply, meaning that they don't have an agenda going in. They're just there to listen and receive, just like all, you know, Amber or Robert, or, you know, these people who go in and who are working with people. They're not going in and saying, I can fix your problem. They're listening. What is it that wants to emerge here? What is the story that wants to be told? All of the artists, whether they're writers or painters or ceramicists, also listen deeply. What is the story that wants to be told here? What is this? What is it that's changing, or what is it that wants to change? And so as I started interviewing all of these people, then I started listening, okay, what's common here? What are we all saying? And I arrived at these seven principles, and then I started to really check them out. You know, I sort of used it as a wheel or a template where I would apply it to a social change, or I would apply it to a personal change, or I would apply it to a health change, and said, does this hold? And it does. It really does. So that the idea behind these seven principles is, one, to help you locate yourself in the particular change that you're in, but then also if you are stuck in a change, you know, it's not moving, you look and you see, do I have enough? Listen deeply. Do I have enough? Spark fire. Do I have enough? Find community. And usually that's the one. I find that most people, when they're going through a change, tend to isolate, tend to pull back, as if they're embarrassed or ashamed about the change, or they feel like, oh, I've got to do this myself, when it is the time to reach out. And find community doesn't just mean, it's not just about people, it really is about seek support. And support can come from friends, it can come from advisors, it can come from research, it can also come from a physical practice or a spiritual practice. But when we're going through times of change, we need something outside of ourselves to help.
Sharon Weil's book is called Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. The idea of finding community, it sort of resonates with another part of the book where you point out the silos we tend to stay in, how our interests and alignments determine the perspectives we seek. You know, we everything gets sort of regurgitated, particularly as you point out our Google searches. You know, the things we searched for last sort of get refined into tighter and tighter spirals. So So when we're seeking community, I mean, we should be, I think you're suggesting, be fairly open-minded about who's in that community.
Well, that's right, you know, and especially in this information age, or I would say this too much information age, right, where things are coming at us right and left, and our poor brains just need a way to categorize, need a way to slow it down. And so creating silos of, oh, so I'm only going to look for this information, or I'm only going to look for these people, because it's a way of just trying to simplify, right, just simplify all that's coming at us. You know, when people become stressed, or when even communities become stressed, it's my observation that people start to become tribal. You know, that they when we feel threatened, we seek out the people who are like us for protection. You know, I think it's primal, that we seek out the people who are like us for protection, whether it's like-minded, whether it's that they look like us, whether it's that they have share our politics, because we want to feel somehow safer. But really, in the world that we live in, this is not how it's going to work, right? We need to reach across our differences. We need to reach into other kinds of communities to be refreshed so that we're not always operating in what I would call a closed system.
Mm-hmm.
Closed system is something that just, if it's closed, there's no new information coming, and it just starts to spiral on itself and get tighter and tighter and tighter till it's just not even possible to get new information.
Or think in terms of not letting any new air into the room or putting new water in the fish tank, that kind of thing.
Exactly, exactly. And that, you know, that fish tank is going to go stagnant pretty soon.
We're talking to Sharon Weil again on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. You can join the conversation on the Exchange as we talk about some of the great concepts that Sharon picked up from conversations with other people. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. So there's obviously people who handle change well in adaptability, people who initiate change too, and that brings us to a section of the book about people who are good initiators. Who is Jacques Verdun, and what did he do for prisoners at San Quentin? You mentioned this briefly, I think, earlier.
Yes, Jacques Verdun works in San Quentin, and now his programs are being implemented in prisons throughout the state of California, and in fact, he also consults throughout the world. He has a program called GRIP, which is guiding rage into power. He works with inmates, often life-sentenced inmates, to help transform and create a change of heart. You know, he asks them to really step into the fire of their own existence and face not only the crimes that they committed, but the abuses that they experienced, because it seems that almost all of them experienced extreme abuse in their coming up, and to really recognize what is the source of their violence. And be able to face it and transform it and become declared peacemakers. It's so inspiring. And he now has, he's been doing this for a number of years, and the graduates from his program are getting paroled and in the outside world are training others, you know, especially at-risk youth, to not go down that path. And not just the path of actions, but the path of not being able to handle your own emotions, you know, your own emotions of grief and of rage, and that go into action, right, to stop it, where you can recognize what is that impulse that takes me into violence. And you don't have to be someone who's committed a crime in order to feel that chain of events, right? We all understand that impulse that takes us into rage or anger, and then how do you transform that?
And it sounds like people who come out of the GRIP program actually have a lower recidivism rate than the rest of the general population at San Quentin.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the recidivism, recidivism rate is very high. It's something like, and I may be misquoting, but something like 65% return. And with Jacques' program, graduates from his program, there is no return.
No return.
There is no return to prison. No.
Wow.
Which is why he's being, his work is being acknowledged and implemented in other prisons, because it really does work.
So let's talk about some of the other people in the initiating change section of the book. Michael Stocker is a bioacoustician, which is not something I've heard of before.
So, you know, Michael Stocker works with sound, and he works with man-made, man-created sounds in the ocean and their effects on sea mammals and all of sea life. So he's talking about, you know, the sonar testing that the Navy does.
Yeah.
That affects dolphins and whales. He's talking about just the noise from ships, freighter ships, the noise that comes from drilling, ocean drilling for oil. And the effect, because, you know, we tend to look at the ocean as just a big dumping ground, right? It's just, it's out there. It's deep. It can take whatever we want to throw in there.
We can throw things away.
Yeah. No, we throw things away. We flush them down the toilet. Out of sight, out of mind, right? You know, water is highly conductive for sound. Highly conductive for sound. And there are, you know, and all of the creatures that live in the ocean are navigating by sound in some way. And we don't recognize the effect that the man-made sounds that we're putting into the ocean are affecting these creatures.
There's a fun story in here right after Michael Stocker's story about Jackie Welch. Is it Schlicker?
Yes,
Who was a performer, but she performed with a new partner over time.
Yes, her new partner now is Clay. So, but she, you know, so artists have a different relationship to change, and they are actually working in what I would consider to be the medium of change, right? You put a you put paint on a canvas, it's changed. She's working with clay now. You mold it into a particular shape, it's changed, and it's changed, and it's changed again. And so with this idea, again, about listening deeply, she says that, you know, as an improvisational actress, her job is to listen to her partner. Someone's throwing out an idea. You've got to pick it up. You've got to say yes and. You know, you say, okay, it's a great workshop for working with change, because something comes at you, whether you like it or not. Your partner has said, we're in a bus station. So now you got to be in the bus station. The scene is now set in the bus station, whether you like it or not. And she has to respond to that and add to it and move it along, right? And so that's her training. Her training is to say yes and to whatever comes her way. And so now she's taking it into how she works with clay. And she's not, again, assuming that, well, she says, okay, I want to make a vase. But the clay itself, it's a call and response relationship with that clay, right? And anyone who works with clay knows this better than I do, that clay is going to start to shape itself, right? Or it's going to respond to your hands and to the movement of the wheel, but then it's going to take on its own shape. And maybe it's not going to go the way you think it's going to go. But can you be open to letting it go where it wants to go and see what the possibilities of that?
Being open to possibilities, open to change, is the discussion topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Sharon Wild wrote a book called Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. So let me come aside of the material at this moment and just ask if there were any of these sessions with all the people you talked to for the podcast that led to the book, or perhaps all of them, that made you sit up in your chair and go, wow.
Yeah, I'm saying all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I learned from every single one of these people, because I was doing a lot of deep listening myself, right? And asking, you know, and just inspired. Each one of these people is so inspiring to me, and they are each masters in their own field. I would say each one of these people has been doing whatever it is they're doing for at least 30 plus years. And so to get that kind of wisdom, because they've done a lot of thinking and reflecting and playing and tossing things around in order to arrive at knowing what they know. And I would say that, you know, perhaps a commonality to all of these people, and perhaps why I chose them, is that they each have a lot of what I call changeability. They have a lot of flexibility in how they approach what they do, because they understand that is the way to work with change. You know, you have to be responsive. You have to listen to the effectiveness of what you're trying to put out in the world, whether it's some kind of strategic plan or whether it's creating some sort of artwork. You know, you've got your idea, and you do have to have a strategy, and you have to, you know, be able to take the steps, and what I say, the incremental steps to making that happen. But then you also have to listen and say, is this working? And if it's not working, you have to be able to be willing to make course corrections.
Well, so did you find that was innate in these people, or did they have to change their approach over time? Were they people who resisted the obstacles that came in front of them before they learned how to go with the flow?
You know, I'm not sure. I think some of them are just natured this way, which is why I admire them, you know. And, of course, they learn over and over again. You know, one of the unexpected guests that I interviewed is Amy McEachern, who has a packing and moving business. And the reason I wanted to speak to her, first of all, is that people are always overwhelmed by their clutter. And when it comes time to move a house, for me, it's like one of my worst anticipated experiences. But she has sat with people moving, literally moving. They're changing their life. And she says, you know, people move because a change has already happened in their life, a significant change. They have a new job, they have a new relationship, or they've ended an old relationship. And that what she's doing is just bringing their stuff along with them. But she works with people. You know, she doesn't necessarily say this, but she is guiding them in their emotions about their change, as well as just, you know, throwing it in a box and moving it along. And she understands what is inherent in the difficulties that people face when they go through a change.
I did love the story of Amy McEachern. We'll talk more about adapting to change and the people who can help us with that. Sharon Weil talked to many of them for her book, Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. Back on the Jefferson Exchange with Sharon. And if you'd like to join us, your phone calls and emails in a minute 10. It's the final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're going to talk about the word change a lot in the balance of the hour, as we have already, because dealing with change is what Sharon Weil's book Changeability is all about. She's an author, activist, filmmaker, somatic educator, hosts a podcast called Passing for Normal, and the interviews for the podcast ended up in the book called, subtitled, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. If I didn't give the title, it's Changeability. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about our ability to navigate change. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. The story of Amy McEachern, who helps people move, which is obviously a bit of a uprooting, and as she points out, it's you know, people have already had a change in their lives. That's why they're moving. Do we have to accept, though, that adapting to change gets harder as we get older?
I don't know that we have to accept it, but it is often the case. You know, and we get back to this idea of a closed system that we were talking about before. You know, as people age, they do tend to pull their lives in, whether it's just because as we age, there is a natural slowing down process. Biologically speaking, and it extends into how people engage with their world. People get what we call set in their ways, right? We all know someone who has become more set in their ways as they've gotten older. And so it is about, you know, people start to pull in the edges of their lives and create more of a closed system. And so it can be more difficult for them to change. On the other hand, you know, people as they get older are dealing with a tremendous amount of loss. You know, death of friends, death of a partner, a lot of deaths because that their peers are leaving, right? And so it's important to acknowledge the grief. You know, some people get very philosophical as they get older about the passage of time and the passage of life. And other people become more afraid because they see that the implications are that their life is coming to a close.
So we're dealing with the fact that as we go through life, it seems like many more of the changes are changes that come from outside. I mean, and you do deal with this in the book, changes from outside of us and our desires and change that comes from inside. Is part of the changeability that you find owning the change no matter where it comes from?
Yes, I think it's really important. It's like, what is the first step in meeting change is just to acknowledge that this change is indeed happening. I may not like it, but I do need to recognize that it's happening. Just like, you know, if I get a cancer diagnosis, I may not like it, but it doesn't help me one bit to deny it and refuse to acknowledge it, because that just postpones the possibility of the different choices that I have about how to meet it, right? You know, the more that you can acknowledge change as it's happening, the more resource you have for possibly meeting it in a number of different ways. The longer you wait, perhaps you've given yourself just one chance, one choice. You know, it's like if you want to go to a concert or something and you get tickets really early, you've got your choice of seats. Or like on an airplane, you know, if you wait to the very last minute, you're sitting in a middle seat in the back of the plane.
Or if you go basic economy, I found out, but that's a different story.
Yes.
There is a chapter here on the things that stop change. Is that often a who or a what or some combination thereof?
Well, so, you know, what stops change is resistance to change. And all resistance is just different faces of fear. So fear of the unknown is often what stops us from making change. Sometimes what stops us is just literally lack of information, right? But we're talking about resistance, and the different faces of resistance can be procrastination, it can be denial, it can be shame or embarrassment. We don't want to make a mistake, so we don't make a change because we just don't want to be seen as foolish somehow. That there are many different ways in which we can stop change. Now, sometimes resistance is a good thing, and it's necessary because the purpose of resistance is to slow things down when they're moving too fast. And so sometimes I just need more time. I just need more time to consider this change, to figure out how I want to meet it. But oftentimes people just have a habitual response to meeting change. Just as, you know, Jackie Welch-Lischer meets change with yes and. Some people meet change with just a habitual no.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is it that's going to bring movement around that habitual no if that's the first thing, if that's the first way that you meet change?
Let's talk about some of the other people in the book, and this goes back to the inspiring change section. Camille Maureen inspires a sensual, integrated, fierce, loving life. What is her field of work, and how does she make these inspirations?
So Camille Maureen teaches women's embodiment practice, and what that means is she teaches both a movement body practice and also meditation practice, and the way in which she approaches meditation is through the senses, is through sensation. She and her husband, Lauren Roche, have written a number of what I consider to be brilliant books. Camille's book is Meditation Secrets for Women, Discovering Your Passion, Pleasure, and Inner Peace. And it speaks about the need for women to have a different type of meditation practice than is normally presented, and that is a practice that is based in sensation, that is based in the body, because women are biologically based differently than men, and that both she and her husband Lauren, who teach meditation all around the world, you know, say that meditation is a practice that was developed, you know, thousands of years ago, basically for monks who were living away from the world. And the idea was to have a transcendent experience that really did not involve the body. And what they're saying is that in the 21st century, we need to have a different type of meditation practice, and that needs to include sensation, sensuality, really being in touch with the world that you're living in, and creating awareness through that. Those portals.
And there's in a similar vein, we're talking about working with the body now. Fred Sugarman is mentioned in the book too. What did you get from him?
Fred Sugarman he calls himself a movement artist. Studied to be a, you know, performer, actor, dancer, and teaches again people how to bring their emotions, work with change through the body. You know, it's one thing to say, I want to change. It's another thing to actually make a gesture towards it, right? And sometimes that gesture is not known yet. It's not known where it's going to go. And so so Fred, so, you know, within the book, Camille Maureen, Fred Sugarman, Robert Littman, Amber Gray, you know, these are all people who work with movement, a movement practice as a way to self-discovery. And Fred also is very, he's very much of a nature boy. You know, he's very involved with nature and of really, all these people are, because you can't work with your own body without feeling its resonance to all of the natural world, right? And to find ways that we can source and resource ourselves as human beings from the qualities that we see in nature, tree, river, ocean, mountain. You know, how am I like a mountain? How am I like the river? How is change moving like the river?
For you, Sharon, before you, I don't know how long you've been involved with the movement work in Continuum, but was change harder for you before that?
I'm not sure if I would say that change was harder, but I would say that I was a much more linear person. I was much more linear in my thinking, much more goal-directed. At the time, I was working in the film and television business, and I think I was much more production-oriented than creativity-oriented, which means that there were goals. I always had some goal, right? And so through Continuum and through just the way in which I have lived my life, it has been more of an exploration, right? More of an open question, more of an open inquiry. What is going on right now? What needs to go on right now? What wants to go on right now? And in approaching, you know, how do we just become more flexible and adaptable to the change that is coming? And what we were saying earlier, the first thing you do is you just acknowledge it, right? You acknowledge that this change is happening. And then you locate yourself, or you locate the nature of that change. Is it an internal change? Is it coming from inside of me? Is it something that I want to make manifest? Or is it a change that's coming from outside of me? Is this a fast change? Is it a like impossibly slow change? Is it unseen? Is it unexpected? Like just locating myself. And then reaching for these seven principles to see which one I could use more of. You know, which one can I lean on? How can I be supported by the idea that change is moving incrementally, always?
Let me restate the seven principles for the people who might have joined us later. It's bring awareness, listen deeply, find community, proceed incrementally, align with nature, have hope, and spark fire. And to come back to the discussion of the performer, Jackie Welch-Schlicker, the idea of yes and, I've taken an improv class myself. It really makes you think in different ways when you have to accept the proposition that the other person you're on stage with casts to you.
That's right. And so you have to play with it. Jackie's whole life is about play and playfulness, right? As are many of the people that I speak with in this book, as am I. I'm all about play. You know, the book that I wrote to accompany Changeability is called The Changeability Playbook, How to Navigate Your Own Change, which is filled with, you know, activities and question sets to help you navigate and locate yourself in your own change. But it's called play because we want to play. Play is much more fun than work. And when you take a more playful approach to whatever change you're in, you know, even if it's really a serious change, can I be more playful, which means can I be more creative? Can I let some new ideas come in? And certainly like in, you know, on the improvisation stage, a new idea has come. Boom, you're thrown the idea. You know, you're in a rocket ship. Okay, we're in a rocket ship. So now how do I adapt? How do I make use of it? How do I find the next response? And, you know, life is an improvisation, right?
It truly is.
We're making it up as we go along. And, you know, I'm hoping to provide some tools, some concrete tools to help people in this improvisational play of life.
I have to ask about the film and TV business, though, because having spent quite a while in television news and promotions myself, it just boggles the mind. You know, the stuff we used to have to work with, the huge equipment and everything, and now you can take better movies on your phone.
I know. When I first was working, so, you know, my progression, I went to film school, and then I worked as an assistant editor and an editor, and when I did that, you know, We had big one-inch videotape reels, right, in three-quarter inch. I mean, there was none of this manipulating of images. It was, you had to actually physically manipulate the images. You had to splice the film together. You had to do all of that. And communication was much more difficult. But, you know, we did it. It was, you know, it's how you worked it. But talking about, you know, how things have changed, the technology that's available to us changes how we receive, you know, our entertainment and how we receive information and how we can. And again, it's like, how do we not be overloaded?
Mm-hmm. And just roll with the changes, move with the changes, accept the changes, move on from there.
And accepting a change doesn't mean I have to like it, and I really want to be clear about
that. Okay,
this.
good point.
Because people think, I'm not going to accept that change. I don't like that my husband just walked out on me. You know, but you do need to, it's very helpful to accept that this change has occurred. I don't have to like it to accept it. I don't have to like if I have a serious health diagnosis. But if I can accept that that is the current state of my being right now, then I can have choices about how I want to meet that change.
Interviews with many people who have learned how to navigate change well. The book is called Changeability, How Artists, Activists, and Awakeners Navigate Change. It's the work of Sharon Weil, who will continue, I think, talking to more people in the podcast. You still doing the Passing for Normal podcast?
I am doing the Passing for Normal podcast, and I'm going to begin a new season end of September, beginning of October, and you can find it through iTunes.
All right, we'll look for it. Thanks for joining us today, Sharon. Appreciate it.